and welcome to Irreverent Testimony, a political podcast by and for millennials and occasionally some Gen Xer types as well. It is Friday, February 26, 2016. This is Travis. I'm flying solo tonight. That awful, horrible cold that you heard that I had on the last podcast has now been taken up by Rachel, so she's sitting this one out, recovering at home, and it's just me tonight flying solo. So, what's going on? Well, last night there was a GOP debate, if you could call it that. It was pretty much an embarrassment to the entire party, all the candidates running, and certainly most people who would call themselves Republican political operatives at this point. It was spun, of course, as a great victory by Trump supporters and Trump antagonists, and I'll get to that in a hot second. Tomorrow is the South Carolina Democratic primary, which we'll also very likely be podcasting, hopefully with Arliss Bunny joining us. And we have our Super Tuesday live streaming spectacular that we're setting up with Pierre, of all people, if you remember that guy who was on with me for the early episodes. He actually started the logo and the whole deal on Podbean, so he's sort of the godfather of all this. He'll be running Mission Control, sort of like Leon in Midnight Madness. And Rachel and I and Dana and perhaps Molly will be calling or Skyping in from our caucus locations throughout Denver proper, letting you know how that's going, just to give you a little insight and a little first-person access to the whole caucus process on Super Tuesday. So check that out on our YouTube live channel. I'll have a link to that. So that's about it for the housekeeping. Last night, in case you didn't see, in Houston, there was a Republican debate. We're down to, of course, Trump, Rubio, Cruz, Kasich, and Ben Carson. And the mission, clearly, was for, at least for Carson and Cruz, the only actual, probably legitimate, you'd say, contenders left at this point after Trump, was to go right after Trump. And to Rubio's credit, he finally did. He went after Trump with full gusto, attacking him on his use of undocumented Polish workers when he was building Trump Tower in New York. This is not a new story. It's been around forever. This is the first time I think any of the other candidates have even really bothered to mention it more than in passing. They went after him for him having not released his taxes yet, which I'll get to in a second. They went after him for his lack of a health care plan. Of course, some of the resident tax that he donated to the Clinton Foundation, which nobody seems to really care about. And yeah, they just really went after him, especially Rubio, went after him really hard, trying to play the tough guy. I would think it's a little too late for that at this point, but I guess it had to be done, and Rubio's trying, and he extended that on the campaign trail today, really raising the bar in terms of how this campaign is going in terms of maturity. I think accusing Trump of pissing his pants during the commercial breaks, which was interesting. Trump, of course, fired back. It's going to be tough for Rubio to out-Trump Trump, but that's what he's trying. It's what he's trying to do. Might be a little late in the game for that. I mean, his diehard supporters will eat it up, but you know, I don't know how many converts he expects to carry with that. But anyway, the debate was mostly non-substantive. It was a poo-slinging fest. Ben Carson complained about not getting enough questions, but maybe there's for good reason. Because when he was asked a question about replacing Scalia, he said something about fruit salad. No, really, he did. He mumbled incoherently about how he would choose a Supreme Court replacement, you know, as if, LOL, he's still going to be president one day. And he said he would look at the entire fruit salad of their lives in terms of potential Supreme Court nominee. No, he actually said that, and I'm not exactly I don't know what he means, honestly. I guess what he was trying to say was like the tapestry of the different judicial decisions and work, but to make that metaphor into saying the fruit salad of their lives is something that either a crazy person or an alien from outer space would say, because I've been trying to put myself in the mind of someone who would either use that metaphor on a regular basis or like it's just in their vernacular, like talking about someone's varied past and their body of work and their resume and calling it the fruit salad of their life, or someone who that metaphor would come to mind off the cuff when trying to explain something like that. I'm trying to put myself in the brain of a person who would say something like that. I just don't know. I love Ben Carson so much. He's so weird. He's the most bizarre candidate. I don't know why he's still in the race. He's going to keep hanging on, I guess, at least through Super Tuesday. And like I said to Rachel and the others, like, oh, he might stay in the whole way. I'm like, well, I guess he could. And if he thinks he's going to still sell books, but it still costs money to fly to these different, you know, states and the debates and to pay some staff, even if it's bare minimum. And if you're not raising any more money, which Ben Carson claims he's still raising money, but that's hard to believe at this point. I mean, you just can't really do it forever, polling at 5% and 6%. But I'm going to miss him. I mean, the fruit salad of our lives. You can't write that. You know, you couldn't write that for a Saturday Night Live skit or anything else. So Ben Carson was talking about fruit salad, and then everybody else was just being fruity. Yeah, it was just ugly. It was a poop slinging fest. Ted Cruz went as far as to make a claim. Well, here's the thing with Trump said something a little odd in terms of he's going to release his taxes soon, but he can't right now because he's being audited. Like the last 4 or 5 years, he's being audited. And at first I was kind of like, that sounds a little suspicious. But in thinking about it, yeah, I guess it makes sense. If he's got his last 3 or 4 years of tax returns being audited, which is not unusual. Very rich people get audited. I mean, I've never been audited, knock on wood, but that's because I've never claimed. I won't tell you the number, but it's obviously not nearly as much as Trump. It's nothing that's going to raise probably any red flags to the IRS in terms of my yearly income thus far. So what he said was, well, I'm being audited, and I guess that would make sense because if he and the other guys hit him on it, well, you should release it now anyway. If he released his taxes now and then the audit uncovers something that needs to be corrected or changed or was a mistake, you know, not anything to do with fraud, but just some, you know, an audit might uncover a discrepancy, or you didn't dot an I or cross a T, or you didn't carry the 2 with the trigonometry for, you know, this withholding or whatever. It's usually after an audit, you're going to have 1 or 2 corrections. So I could see like he releases it and then the audit changes something and then they could use that against him. Oh, see, there were discrepancies on his tax returns and, you know, to avoid that, it would actually make sense to say, well, I can't release them in the middle of the audit. I'll release them when the audit is over. But Ted Cruz, being Ted Cruz, took it a step further and said, well, he's audited. That could mean fraud. And he said that during the debate. And Cruz actually, Trump actually kind of let that go. And then again, after the debate, he was in the spin room. He was interviewed and he said, well, that's no excuse to not release your tax returns because you're being audited. I mean, that could uncover fraud. And he made this completely baseless allegation again, bringing up the idea that somehow there's fraud in the middle of I almost said Romney. I'll get to Romney in a second. In Trump's tax returns. Because ironically, the day before the debate, or maybe it was the day of the debate, Mitt Romney wanted to talk about releasing your taxes because, as you remember, in 2012, that was a big deal. He wouldn't release them, and then he wouldn't, and then he did, or Harry Reid trolled him into it, and by then the damage was already done because he thought he was hiding something. And Romney said, you know, when Trump releases his taxes, there's going to be a bombshell in there. And it's like, Romney is saying that. Mr. Tax Return Controversy himself. Now, he didn't specify. He kind of said, well, it could be that he's not nearly as rich as he says he is, or maybe there's something, you know, really untoward in there, but, you know, there's going to be a bombshell in there. Just you wait and see. Trump laughed it off, but then Rubio and Cruz, especially Cruz, picked up on that and said, oh, you know, you being audited is no excuse, and maybe there's fraud going on, and it did reek of desperation, and Trump himself said, you know, at some point, these guys are getting desperate, you know, keep punching away, guys, and it was, you know, it's kind of funny. But they finally went after him, and you know, you're just sitting there as an outside observer thinking, you've waited this long. He's whittled the field down. He's got these huge leads going into Super Tuesday. Unless the polls completely turn around in a hurry, it's a runaway train heading to the nomination, unless they pull some hijinks at the convention, which I'll also talk about briefly. But, yeah, I mean, that's where we are. And so now you're going to hit him. I mean, what were you waiting for? I guess what they were waiting for, if I had to guess, was that, well, Trump has this populist anger and these people are on his side, so we can't cut him down to size and piss them off. We just have to gradually, you know, nudge them over to our side. And that didn't work. There was no indication it would work because his messaging and his style was so much different from everybody else. And now they have to try to tear him down. And his hardcore supporters are so dug in that I don't think you're going to move too many of them. The only hope is that everybody else drops out and only one left of Cruz, Rubio, or Kasich remains standing. So, but they have to try to go after Trump. They can't just go at each other. That's not getting them anywhere. That's treading water. So here we are, and we're going into Super Tuesday. Trump has huge leads everywhere. There's Cruz is still leading in Texas. Last poll I saw, Rubio is even trailing Trump in Florida. Florida's not a Super Tuesday state, of course, but Texas is. So Cruz will get that. Other than that, it looks like Trump is gonna run the table, as will Hillary for the most part. But we'll get to that. So that's what we had last night. It was really embarrassing. I mean, it was just, you know, this stuff is fine in the new Trump world of the Republican primary process. And I know that Democrats and liberal pundits and my Daily Coast people are freaking out because of the turnout difference right now in the primaries and caucuses so far on our side and as their side. And I'm much less worried about that. I think it's all about the Trump phenomenon, and either it's going to be Trump and then these equal numbers or greater numbers that are coming out to oppose him, you know, which is adding to that huge overall turnout number, it's going to be either Trump is the nominee or he's going to get squeezed out. And, at the convention by some shenanigans and he'll go ballistic or he'll run third party. That seems less likely at this point because I think he's going to get the nomination. But yeah, I mean, sure, a lot of those Cruz, Rubio, whoever will reluctantly go ahead with Trump eventually if he's the nominee. But this huge energy and turnout, you know, it's I don't think it's going to be there come the fall, where you have on the other side, you have a lot of people just not bothering because Hillary, Bernie, sure, I'll take either one. And yeah, it's very divisive online with the very hardcore, you call them the Bernie bros and the Hillary Pumas, and they're slinging some crap at each other. It's not as bad as it was in 2008, by the way. But yeah, that's kind of feisty and contentious. But I talk to a lot of people, and they're like, you know what, I'm fine with either one. And yeah, they might show up in caucus, they might show up in primary, but no, they don't have this fervor that there is either pro-Trump or anti-Trump, and I think that has a lot to do with the turnout difference right now. I'm not totally discounting it, you know, but I'm not freaking out about it either. It's exciting because it's a sideshow, but a sideshow doesn't win an election. Yes, Trump's hardcore 35, 40, 50% of the GOP right now is going to come out and vote for him in a general, no doubt, but he's going to win over a huge block of independents. He's going to win over a huge block of moderates. He's going to get the black a percentage of the black vote. He's going to get the 30 to 40% he needs of the Latino vote. Please. You know, I love my liberal people. They love freaking out, losing their minds. If they honestly think that we're in trouble, if Trump is the nominee, then, I mean, just move to Canada now. Just don't even wait. Just get your passport handy and get out of the country now if you just really think that the two candidates on our side just couldn't possibly beat Donald Trump running for president. But anyway, so today you had Rubio on the campaign trail basically calling Trump a poopy pants. He was in Dallas and he was saying that Trump was putting on a lot of makeup and he requested a full-length mirror, as if that's some kind of dig. And that, you know, maybe he needed to see if his pants were wet because Rubio just had him so rattled he pissed his pants, according to Rubio. And, of course, Trump wasn't going to let that sit. So he reminded everybody that he turned into a robot in the New Hampshire debate and that, you know, that he is a flop sweater and that he's a choker. And then Rubio went after him for misspelling choker, apparently. Which, actually, I think Rubio was wrong. I think he did spell it right. I think it's Rubio that doesn't know how to spell choker. But be that as it may, yeah, the level of discourse has dropped another 10 degrees because the other candidates have decided if you can't beat Trump, try to be a better Trump than Trump. And I don't see how that possibly works. So that was just a fiasco. I kind of felt like crap last night. My blood pressure was through the roof and I'm still fighting off this cold, so it was a little bit surreal trying to watch this thing and get my thoughts together. So that's the best I can do to sort of relay what that was all about last night. A horror show and a fiasco if you're a Republican strategist that has actual designs on still winning the White House. That said, moving over to the Democratic side. Before I watched the debate, I did watch the first half or so, and then I watched some other bits and pieces of Bernie's sit down with Chris Matthews. And I know a lot of people, a lot of my friends have strong opinions about Chris Matthews. I kind of have a love-hate thing with Matthews. I think he has an incredible wealth of experience. You know, he's worked on Capitol Hill. He's worked in Congress. He's been a very smart political guy for years and years. He brings a wealth of knowledge. He wasn't always really so much a liberal as he is now. And he's got some old school tendencies that are not so liberal, and I understand that. He's really got this obnoxious thing about not letting people finish a sentence or answer a question. Like, he'll ask a question, they'll start to answer, then he'll throw in eight more parts of the question to the point where they can't get a word in edgewise. And he did it to Bernie, of course, and Bernie was getting pissed off about it, trying to keep his cool, and sometimes like, let me answer, please. Which people have to say to Chris Matthews all the time. It doesn't seem to filter through, but I guess that's just his style. It is pretty obnoxious, so when Chris Matthews is just ranting or giving his last word speeches, he's great. When he's supposedly having a round table or interviewing people, it's unwatchable because he doesn't let them talk. He is really friggin' obnoxious. And Rachel can't stand him, and I completely understand why. I thought Bernie, for the most part, did really well. This sort of town hall. I don't think Bernie was taking questions. I think it was all Chris Matthews. But most of the questions he answered really well. Now, Chris Matthews, besides his style being really abrasive and obnoxious, did ask a lot of the questions that we ask and that other liberals ask. Namely, how are you going to get any of this stuff through Congress? You know, you've got these great progressive revolutionary ideas. How the hell are you going to get 60 votes? And his answer was, you know, this is a revolutionary wave election, and there's going to be so many people behind me, so many young people. There's the demand and the millions and millions of people is going to be so great that Congress won't have a choice. And God, I want to believe that, but I know the reality of it. I know that these districts are gerrymandered. I know McConnell's seat is safe. I know that these freedom caucus people are safe. You know, there is not millions and millions of Bernie supporters in these deep red states. They're going to kick all these intransigent House assholes out. I would love to believe that's the case, but it isn't. You know, Bernie's trying to sell that it'll be this huge wave election. But again, no, this is one thing where the turnout thing is a little disappointing. The turnout on the Democratic side is nowhere comparable to 2008, what Obama did. And Obama, that was a wave election, right? You know, took both chambers, had huge pickups in the House and Senate, and took the White House. Bernie is saying he'll do the same thing, but the turnout so far in the caucuses and primaries don't bear that out yet. So that's the problem, and that's what a lot of, you know, Hillary supporters, like the people close to me that really, really love Bernie but are a little more pragmatic, that's just kind of what they say. Now, I see it a little differently, that if these revolutionary things can't get pushed through right away, you know, the idea is if a Bernie Sanders is elected president and there is at least movement, we take the Senate back and have movement in the House, then that's the start of a revolution, and we might not necessarily be able to get everything done right away, but it's a start and it's a push in the right direction. Of course, the danger to that, as we've talked about before, is Bernie comes in with all these sweeping promises. He doesn't have nearly enough clout or control of Congress to get any of this stuff through, and then all these young millennials who were all excited get very disillusioned, like they were the first 2 years of Obama's presidency. And that's a risk, but I mean, the alternative is you just throw up your hands and say we're stuck within this system that'll never be equitable, or you take the Clinton approach and you say we do these small things incrementally and that'll get us to where we want to go. The problem is, especially when you talk about young African Americans and young people in general and people of color and millennials who have all this horrible student loan debt and still can't afford health care, even with the gains of Obamacare, saying incremental isn't good enough. We need huge change right now. And okay, you're telling us all the reasons why this can't happen, but we're saying it can. And I don't know. If that's the thing again, and if I was seeing these huge turnout numbers, now there's a lot more to go. So just because we've had four or five states already, you know, isn't reason to sort of turn around and say this isn't a huge wave potential election. Despite all the people that show up to these Bernie rallies, like, but that was a coalition for Obama too. That's what people forget, right? He had all the African American voters, the young voters, people of color, a lot of independents. And that's not happening for these two candidates right now. So it's just, you know, I'm still a Bernie supporter. I'm still going to caucus for him. I think it was Charlie Pierce had a great piece today that, yeah, I'm a horrible cynic, but I'm still voting for Bernie Sanders. And he kind of lays out exactly the way I see it as well. So I'm still, but that's not, I'm not dissuading. I totally understand the Hillary supporters, why they're going to caucus and vote for her and why they think she's the better choice. And I'm perfectly happy with her as a second choice. That's the difference that you're going to find in me and most of the Bernie supporters I know personally than the people you see online that say, oh, you know, Hillary's just as bad as Ted Cruz, which of course is asinine. So that's where I am. In terms of where the race is, I'm still not seeing the math for Bernie Sanders. Now, I've seen some scenarios where, okay, yeah, Hillary cleans up on Super Tuesday in all these southern states, but then Bernie turns around and he takes Michigan and New York and California and all these huge states. There's a couple problems with that. One is the polling so far doesn't show that's coming to materialize in any way, shape, or form. Secondly, where's the momentum to do this? The momentum is squarely going to be on Hillary's side if she does what the polls say she's going to do on Super Tuesday. I mean, South Carolina tomorrow, it's not even going to be close. So we were considering not even maybe bothering to do a podcast, but I think we need to because it's an important transition time, and we also need to tell you about the details of our Super Tuesday spectacular live stream that you're going to have to tune in for. But she's going to clean up in South Carolina. Bernie's not been able to make headway there, at least according to any of the polls I've seen. The closest he's gotten is maybe 15 points, but most of the polls show a much wider gulf than that. She's going to probably win by anywhere 25 to 30 points, if not more, tomorrow night. And then Super Tuesday, Bernie's obviously going to win Vermont, and he's got a chance to win Oklahoma, and he's got a chance to win Massachusetts, and then maybe one or two others. And everywhere else, not only does it look like Hillary's in great shape, it looks like she's going to run big margins in a lot of these big delegate-rich states. So she's going to take a sizable lead into the March 8th primaries, and that is where this hope, and I've seen these charts where Bernie's going to suddenly turn it around. I'm just not seeing where the polling or momentum makes that realistic. And we haven't seen a Hillary meltdown, and I don't think we're any closer to the people that are hoping there's going to be some sort of Hillary indictment for emails. That doesn't seem any closer to fruition, despite what my Republican friends say, that any day now that's going to happen. Of course, they're starting to say that about Trump too, because of Trump University, which Trump may actually have to take the stand. That is a civil case, though, I believe, but still going to be pretty ugly and damaging if Trump has to get there on the stand and explain how he scammed college students with his fake university, giving worthless diplomas. So that should be interesting. And they're just now hitting him on that. I mean, they've brought it up in passing once or twice in some other debates and some things I've seen, but it's like nobody's trying to clobber him with it until last night. And it's kind of amazing to me, right? I mean, did Jeb even ever get that shot in before he was laid to waste? Yeah. So there's that. Meanwhile, in some, some more on the presidential election. As you might have heard, Trump picked up a big endorsement today from none other than Chris Christie. Some people seem to think that's a big deal for a guy that was polling 4% and 5%. Most Christie supporters probably went to Trump anyway. I don't really see how it's that big a deal. Here's a guy that's got his own bad press and trouble still on the horizon. He's not out of the shit yet with Bridgegate. Rick Perry is, though. We forgot to mention that the other night. Rick Perry has been cleared. He's not going to go to prison for his indictment down in Texas, which I've got some feelings about that. I'll probably get to in another podcast. Actually, what Rick Perry did really was pretty awful and was an abuse of power, and at the very least should have been censored. And it doesn't appear he will be. He'll just skate, and that's really, really bad for democracy. But Rick Perry skates. Nobody cares, because nobody cared about Rick Perry running for president in the first place. But the Bridgegate is not over by a long shot for Chris Christie, although Chris Christie and his supporters, like some people I know, like to pretend it is. It's not. He's out. Don't know how much Bridgegate had to do with that, maybe a little. But as one of Trump's main surrogates going forward, hopefully at the same time Trump has to take the stand for the Trump University fiasco, maybe Christie will have to take the stand for Bridgegate. That'll be fun. But yeah, Christie endorses Trump, and MSNBC ran this, like, you know, little 5-minute blurb of Christie going on and on about how saying Trump wasn't qualified, he's an entertainer, he can't just tell people you're fired. And it's like, yeah, whatever. I mean, candidates do this. They tear each other up and say you don't want this guy to be president. And then if they get bumped and they want a place in so-and-so's cabinet or something, they got to turn around and, you know, take that all back. That's just how it goes, you know. I mean, Republicans did that when Hillary dropped out in 2008 and said all those things that Obama's not ready to be commander-in-chief. And of course she had to turn around and say, oh no, he really is. I mean, that's just the nature of the beast. You're going to run, you're going to take your toys and go home, or you're going to turn around and endorse somebody. Jeb hasn't endorsed anybody yet, I don't think. I would assume he would endorse Rubio, but you never know. Paul LePage endorsed Trump. Woohoo. Paul LePage, the most cartoonish, most asinine excuse character for a governor one has ever seen, up there in Maine. I guess Paul LePage avoided impeachment. But that leads me to my next piece on Republican governors in trouble. Rick Snyder in Michigan. As you know, Michigan is Rick Snyder poisoned all the good folks of Flint and others with Legionnaire's disease by being cheap and undemocratic, which is the Republican way. And in the early days of this, he tried to sort of shield himself and said he really didn't know. He blamed the EPA. He blamed some underlings. And now with the emails coming out, it turns out Snyder knew and knew damn full well. And now his former advisors that he's either tossed or shuffled around or probably begged to stay quiet are coming out and acknowledging that Rick Snyder knew exactly what was going on. Even his attorneys, I believe, had come out and said, this is a big effing problem. We should really do something about it. So I don't see how Rick Snyder survives this. The drumbeat is growing. He is going to have to testify before Congress. The FBI and the EPA are looking at possible criminal charges. And unlike the ones they tell you about Hillary Clinton's email server, these are real. Rick Snyder should be worried about things more than holding on to his governorship. Hey, remember Rick Snyder was going to be a Republican presidential candidate? He was a guy that might throw his hat in the ring. Remember that? Yeah, too bad. Rick Snyder, when all this is said and done, is going to be lucky not to go to prison, I think. Or at least if justice prevails, that's where he should be. He should be in prison. And that's just the criminal side. The civil side of it, he could lose every penny over this, or at least he should. We'll see what happens, how it unfolds, but things are not going to get better for Snyder. And I know people are circling the wagons, and Jeb tried to come out and say back when he was a candidate that Snyder did a good job and it's not his fault. And some of the other people are trying to say that, but I think even like Fox is going to have to start covering this now, you know, and getting to the truth of it. So yeah, this is not good for Rick Snyder. Hopefully in the long run, maybe it is good for democracy and people who cared about sanitation and environmental rights for people, even those that are less affluent and didn't vote for you in a gubernatorial election. We're just starting to get the picture of this, and the story behind this is so obscene, not just with the decision to use the Flint River, the corrosive Flint River that they knew or they should have known was going to poison the people of Flint with lead. But in addition, how we got to this point wherein the state of Michigan and the Snyder administration used the state of Michigan's financial problems as an excuse to usurp the democratically elected representatives and appoint, quote, emergency managers who helped him make these decisions. And a lot of people screamed about this, saw something like this potentially coming, and here we are. And it was a really naked destruction of democracy, of people of color and people of lower socioeconomic means, for the purpose of saving money in a state budget and not large amounts of money. That's the part that's, I think, really going to kill people. Not to use a bad metaphor, but the part that's really going to get people is when you see the dollar amounts we're talking about to be saved by doing this, and then you compare that to what it's going to cost to fix this, which is still not happening nearly fast enough, in large part because of the Snyder administration dragging its feet and still having its head in the sand that there even is a problem to be solved. We're just scratching the surface of Flint and what a decades-long scandal this is going to be. This is going to be one for the history books that is astounding, and it's in progress right now, and I don't think people really grasp how effing crazy it really is, what has happened in terms of Rick Snyder and the whole emergency manager debacle and using the Flint River with these old lead pipes and the way he's poisoned. And we're going to, of course, see this over the years and decades when you see these kids growing up with these, a lot of them with these developmental disabilities and other problems from this. Scandal doesn't even begin to describe what this is and the legacy of what this will be. And will the lesson be learned? nobody on the other side of the aisle seems to be learning it right now. They're just doing CYA at this point. When people start going to prison, hopefully. But, you know, don't want to get my hopes up about that. I think back to the financial scandal, nobody went to prison for that. Poisoning people's water, you know, maybe there will be a little more impetus to do something about that. But yeah, so Rick Snyder is in deep doo-doo. I can't wait to hear who he endorses. So Hillary Bernie, am I holding out hope as a Bernie supporter, as a guy who legitimately wants to see him get the nomination and become president? Yeah. Yeah, things can happen. I'm not sort of holding out hope that Clinton implodes or something happens in terms of the emails that forces her out, of course. But I am hoping that something clicks maybe in the psyche of a large group of Americans that have not come around to support Bernie right now. African-American voters, Latino voters, older white voters. It's mostly younger white voters at this point that is still his hardcore base of support. He's trying, and he has made some inroads. And I think a lot of people have said, okay, we're getting to know this Bernie guy better. And yeah, he's all right. We do like him. But I think maybe Clinton, who's always accused of being a terrible campaigner, maybe is just doing a better job as a campaigner than people give her credit for. And maybe that has a lot to do with why he hasn't been able to break through and create a larger coalition to take her down the way Obama did. Maybe that's got something to do with it. We always like to say, well, Bernie's just not getting through. Is it because he's an older Jewish guy from New York, or his message, or that he hasn't spent enough time in the South, or his early missteps with Black Lives Matter? It's like, maybe we should stop just blaming him for effing something up and maybe give the Clinton campaign a little credit. Maybe Hillary Clinton a little credit. Maybe learning some things from 2008 in terms of, yeah, okay, Obama was a transcendent African-American candidate, sure, but maybe there were some other reasons why she completely lost that block so quickly to Obama, despite just the fact that he's an African-American and a transcendent African-American with a great message and he's a great orator. Maybe she deserves some credit, you know. Maybe she's doing something right in all these Super Tuesday states and the other big states right now where she's leading, like New York and California and Florida. You know, maybe she's a better candidate than she's given credit for. That certainly should not be out of the realm of possibility. So I've got another theory as to why Hillary Clinton, why Bernie has not been able to break through and erode her block of support, especially in the South and with a lot of older African-American voters. And I think it directly also ties back to Obama, and I'll explain. I mean, it's not really rocket science. I'm not going to dispel some amazing, incredible knowledge that no one's thought of. It's just no one's maybe put this argument forefront when trying to figure this out, when the pundits kind of scratch their heads and say, why can't Bernie, you know, get these voters on his side? Why are they sticking with Hillary? Well, it was a divisive and an ugly campaign in 2008 for a while. But as soon as the convention happened, and, you know, as soon as, or even it was before we got there, I think, when, you know, Hillary hung it up and she immediately and full-throatedly and energetically endorsed Obama, became his Secretary of State, and has been very loyal, not only working in his cabinet, but has stuck by him and has stuck with his agenda and his fortunes, and as go his so go hers politically. So after that horrible divisive fight, she attached herself to President Obama, and she's been by his side, basically. And I think his strongest supporters see that. I mean, you can say you support the president, you know, from here to eternity. And Bernie has done a pretty good job of trying to convey that, despite the fact that, you know, he did mention maybe trying to primary him in 2012, and he's been critical of him before. But Clinton was right there. She was his Secretary of State. So she was there taking the heat for his foreign policy decisions, for a lot of his other governmental decisions. You know, she was the face of that. She was there with him in the Situation Room to decide to go ahead with the raid on bin Laden. And people remember that, and they understand that. And the other side, if their plan is to, which sometimes it seems like maybe they want to weaken Hillary Clinton and go after Bernie, or have Bernie as the nominee, what do they keep saying? The Clinton Obama this, the Clinton Obama that. So they are reinforcing that, right? Every time Cruz says we can't have this Clinton Obama foreign policy and this Clinton Obama health care and this, that's the other side is hearing that too, and it's reinforcing, yeah, Clinton Obama. This is an extension of the Obama reign, of the Obama administration, the closest thing we can get to it. Sanders, I like him, but maybe not so much. He's not so much that. He wasn't Obama's Secretary of State. He talked about primarying him in 2012. You know, he wasn't the guy running in 2008 that turned around and endorsed him and brought his followers over. So, you know, when you just stop and think about it, it's really not that hard to understand. And unless in the next few days to weeks here, he can suddenly turn. And I know he's gotten some support. Obviously, there's Killer Mike, there's Spike Lee, there's Ben Jealous. There's a lot of prominent people in the African American political community that have supported Bernie. And Clinton had her own misstep the other night, a Black Lives Matter, or somebody affiliated with something similar, reminded her of some very ugly, caustic things she said in support of her husband's crime bill, calling young African-American men super predators. And she didn't handle that very tactfully. She's turning around now and trying to. But on the whole, it's not that hard to understand why big swaths of African-American voters are siding with Hillary. Now, I don't think a whole ton of them are showing up necessarily to caucus and primary for her right now, but they damn well better show up for the general, and you know, she's got to be cognizant of that. So onward and upward. Tomorrow, Rachel will hopefully be joining me if she's up to it, if her voice can hold out. We're very likely going to have Arliss Bunny joining us. We'll be talking about the returns from South Carolina, which I'm not expecting to be surprising in any way, shape, or form. But Arliss will give some insight on where this race is going and probably why you should go ahead and support Hillary. That's fine. Like I said, on this show and this extended Irreverent Testimony universe, we're very amicable in terms of our disagreements of who we would like to be the nominee, because A, we like them both, and B, we're just respectful of differences of opinion. We're not calling the others fascists or whatever. We would highlight each of the strengths and weaknesses and problems and things we'd like to change, because that's kind of how we roll here. That's how we do it. So that's about going to wrap it up for me. Just a little short catching up on some things and opining about the political world at large. We'll get into all kinds more stuff tomorrow. Looking forward to that with Rachel and Arliss and maybe Dana and whoever else wants to jump on. So that'll be it. Stay tuned for tomorrow and our live stream on Tuesday. You're going to want to check that out. Sure, you can watch the returns on MSNBC, but watch it with like the captions on and mute it. And then you definitely need to go to our YouTube live channel, where Pierre will be doing mission control, taking Skype calls if we're allowed to from us at the different caucus sites, and he'll be reading you the returns, and it's going to be just a whole mess of fun and merriment and silliness and whatever else you want to call it. So join us on Tuesday and listen for us tomorrow. I'm Travis, and I'm flying solo. And as usual, stay active, stay tuned, stay involved. Adios.